You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hi, welcome to episode 10 of the Broadway Husbands podcast. I'm Brett.
And I'm Steven.
And we are the Broadway Husbands. So today we're super excited to have an amazing artistic couple who happen to be in town from Seattle. And you might have seen some of their content online, they're a couple, Matthew Olszewski, known as the Shirtless Violinist, and his husband, Paul Castle, who you can check both of them out on Instagram at Paul Castle Studio and Shirtless Violinist or Shirtless Violin.
Violinist.
Yes. I could give a whole spiel, but I always prefer to hear it from you guys. So we'll start, I guess, with Matthew. Like, how did you get into violin playing? When did you start? What did you study? And how did you get to where you are with your content creation?
Well, first of all, thank you for having us on. This is incredible.
Yay.
To be with another creative, artistic couple. This is rare for us, but really exciting. So I got into violin when I was 3. The story is that there was another family with kids playing the violin, and so my mom wanted her first child, me, to play the violin. So I started at the age of 3. She looked around for a teacher, found one who would start me. And I actually have a younger sister, 3 years younger than me. She started violin. 4 years after that, my younger brother came along. He started violin. We were the Von Trapp violin family.
That's awesome. And you, did you have visions of like being in a symphony? Did you go to college for music? Like where did that take you?
Yeah, I just played every day. I was homeschooled, so I could practice all day long. Uh-huh. It was actually the first subject I did, because the rule is in our house growing up was no lunch till you practiced your violin.
Oh, wow.
So that helped. So I was just, as I got older, practicing more and more up till for a brief period of time, I was practicing 5 hours a day, which was crazy.
Wow.
But I didn't do much else. Literally.
So it was a true passion.
It was a true passion. Yeah. But I had no idea what I was going to do with it. I didn't know if I wanted to play with orchestras. I didn't know if I would end up as a soloist or what would happen till I was offered my first job with a ballet orchestra. Yeah. So my first job was playing with a ballet orchestra, Kansas City Ballet Orchestra.
Wow.
And that was for the Nutcracker. So we did, I think, not a lot. It was like 20.
Okay. That's a lot. That's a good amount.
It was fun, especially weekends when you played 5. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of got me into the orchestra world. So I started playing with ballet orchestras, opera orchestras, chamber orchestras, chamber groups, quartets, all of that. And that was my life was wearing either a tux or tails. On stage with part of a big orchestral group playing classical music.
And now you wear nothing in play. Well, Paul, how did you get into illustration and drawing?
I think like most artists, it starts pretty young. I mean, we all sort of start with art when we're kids, you know, coloring in coloring books. So that's sort of where the love and the passion for art began. And I grew up as a kid in the 90s, and I was totally a Disney kid and obsessed with all things Disney.
Yes.
And the first
in the right place.
And you'll see that influence of mine has stretched into the work that Matthew and I do on with his music and music videos. But like I said, the first thing I ever wanted to be was a Disney animator. And so I was just constantly creating art and illustrating and creating my own stories. And stapling together my first little children's books at the age of 6. I still have a copy of this like sort of first book that I made when I was a kid. And that's
you
how I
stole your brother's G.I. Joe book.
That's a great story. I stole my brother's G.I. Joe in space book, ripped out all the pages because I wanted a hardcover. It had to have a hardcover. And then I kind of stapled in my own story about a sad little turtle that had no friends. And I didn't realize just how prescient that was, you know, at the time. It's great. Little piece of history that I have on our bookshelf at home. So anyway, I actually, that interestingly enough, though, as much as I loved art and it was a true passion of mine around the age of 10, 11, I grew passionate about filmmaking and I wanted to be a filmmaker, a director. And it, however, I was diagnosed with a rare eye disease at age 16. And due to the fact that I learned I was losing my vision permanently, I sort of abandoned my dreams of going to film school. And so I studied English literature and art history instead. But by the time I graduated from college, I was selling my art professionally and discovered that this is sort of working for me. And I parlayed that hobby into a full-time career about 12 years ago.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing.
That is such a good story.
It's very inspiring.
Where on that path, both your artistic paths, did you meet? And how did that, how did you get to where you are now as husbands?
So we met on a dating app.
Oh,
so
yes.
I know in your first episode, you recommended in person. but when you're legally blind, it's really hard to get out and meet people.
Sure.
So Paul was very reliant on.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I had like every app and was like every profile, dating profile for years. And I kind of used that to vet and meet people because I couldn't, you know, primarily one of the primary components of my sight loss is I have no low light vision. So it's called night blindness. And so going out to a club, I could end up with who knows who. And I loved to dance in my early 20s and I would go out, but I had no idea who I was dancing with. So there was just.
But people
no
who
hope.
Aren't legally blind
have oh, sure.
go home with who
of
knows
course,
who.
Of course, yes.
Because they're just not paying attention.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, it's been funny here in New York City. We'll go through those revolving doors that every building
oh,
has going into them.
Those.
We don't have those in Seattle, but
they are
Paul usually loses me and then he'll come out the other end and grab onto some other guy.
Oh, it's, yeah. Well, that's sometimes
that
it's a mistake. Sometimes
Columbus
it's not.
Circle, and he was like, I grabbed onto someone else. I said,
and Matthew
he was
said
very
he was cute.
Handsome.
Don't worry about it.
I don't think he minded. So yeah. So we actually just our newest music video is called Grinder to Grooms, and it's actually the real live clips from our first date. We had to recreate our Grindr chat, which we kind of summarized very quickly. So that kind of follows our story from the first date where Paul mm-hmm. taught me to paint. I played my violin for him.
Yeah, that was our first date.
Wow.
It was a confluence of our artistic passions. And that's actually, we had been chatting for a couple of months. And Matthew finally convinced me. I was living in Canada. We were across the border from each other, but just about 35 minutes apart. And I said, well, we have to meet during the day because of my situation with my sight. And he understood everything about my vision loss. And I said, well, I'll give you a painting lesson. I said, but only if you play your violin for me.
Aww.
And it was pretty amazing. And it was an incredible first date. It was truly magical. And I knew instantly that he was different than anybody else I'd ever met. And I had a feeling that it was going to be serious. Yeah, I think, and I told Matthew this during our vows, that I knew he was the one from that first date.
So you weren't disappointed when you finally got together?
Definitely
and
not.
And at the first like
right.
drawing and violin lesson, like that just sealed it for you, right? Before going into it, you had an expectation and the
you
expectation
the
was
truth?
Met?
I thought I was being catfished because I was the most gorgeous
yeah.
man. He sent
yeah,
me
yeah.
this like headless torso picture. I'm like,
I was
that
the
is
headless
not
torso.
You. That is not you. And I had no interest in headless torsos. I'm interested in looking for an intellectual connection.
Mm-hmm.
And some may balk at the fact
which
that
which is
was
rare on Grindr.
Grindr.
Yeah.
Some say that it is, but I mean, I was using every app in mm-hmm. available to me to find that intellectual connection. It just so happened to be on Grindr. And Matthew, I know, was really using the app for hookup. But he quickly learned with me that it wasn't what I was using the app for, and he pursued the first
date. Well, you were really different. I mean, you had your Instagram hooked up. You ran marathons. You painted. Mm-hmm. You drank green smoothies. And you were legally blind.
The green smoothies.
Yeah. And you're blind. And I was like, oh my God, I just have to meet this person. It probably won't go anywhere, but I just have to meet him once. Like, this is the weirdest collection of things.
This is a weird guy. I just have to meet him. See if he's real.
Well, he was cute.
Well, you're both incredibly lucky to get to make money doing what you love, and you're both full time in your careers, which is amazing. Especially not being in a major like LA or New York or even Chicago, Seattle, right?
Yeah.
So, what's the key to successfully being artists in a quote unquote smaller market? How are you guys able to do that?
Well, for us, it's really social media, because we're just putting the music videos, for me, putting the music videos out online. For Paul, he's putting his artwork just on his social media. So we could be anywhere in the world. And because, you know, it's not reliant on, a live show that's housed in one city. I perform live, but it's all over the country and the world sometimes.
And that's furthered by your social media.
All from social media.
Amazing.
Yeah, social media growth is really a primary focus of ours because, as Matthew said, I mean, we really only need to be in a city where we have an international airport, because Matthew travels to perform. And so we just hop on a plane at SeaTac and, you know, travel around the country and the world. And as far as my art goes, I mean, gone are the days of artists requiring galleries and exhibitions really to make their money, because most of the money goes to the gallery, or half of it anyway. And it's difficult to find fresh audiences through galleries and exhibitions, which are often toured by the same groups of people. And I find those atmospheres really stuffy and traditional, and using social media as my platform and allows me the independence and to take the profit, and very little goes to whatever, you know, sort of e-commerce you choose. But I think that it's super important for artists to understand the power of the social media platforms and not to rely on galleries.
Do you both have representation, or do you represent yourselves?
No, it's just...
So you're booking yourself on these gigs?
Yes. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's just the two of us in a tiny one-room apartment doing, you know, working 7 days a week, long 10-hour days, doing it all ourselves. So yeah.
Because like everything we do is with each other. Matthew and I have sort of separate businesses, but we were both heavily involved in each other's work. So we live together and we work together, and we spend 99% of our time together, and we go to the gym together.
Well, we should have done this whole interview shirtless. I don't know what we were thinking. Take it off, guys.
No. what was the song that you taught him to play on the violin, and what did you draw on that first date?
Oh, that's a good question.
I played Hallelujah for
well,
him.
Hold on. You taught me
Twinkle,
because that is part of every Twinkle. New violin student
and were you
learns.
Able to how wait how long was the, that part of
okay
the
so I will tell you this. Matthew produced a lovely painting because I taught him to do it
of a bird.
I couldn't play
because I taught him.
I could not play Twinkle Twinkle by the end of our session. The violin, I mean, I have so much respect for Matthew, because the violin is just truly one of the most challenging musical instruments to master and make sound good. I mean, it's really like it takes so many years to get that thing to sound beautiful. And Matthew is truly gifted. So,
but to answer an earlier question, our art really came together when on our third date, when Paul said, "So what's your dream with music?" And I said, "I want to make beautiful music videos. There's so many crossover classical musicians doing cool stuff." Like the piano guys were kind of new, but big at the time. And I was like, wow. That's so cool. They're having fun. It looks so much fun. It makes people want to listen to classical instruments outside of a concert hall, which is an aging population.
Right.
So I told that to Paul, and he said, well, that's what he told me. He wanted to be a film director until he was diagnosed with his eye disease. And I said, oh, let's just make one. Let's just make a video. Let's have fun doing it. We were going to take a trip down the coast to the Bay Area, and we decided we'd just stop the car and film at any cool spot. So Crater Lake, Mount Shasta, Golden Gate Bridge. And we filmed on an iPhone. I had recorded a Katy Perry song into GarageBand with the built-in mic in a laptop, which is, I don't know, under one of the keys, maybe? I don't even know where the microphone was. I just leaned
And like a karaoke track or something? Or what did you
do? A karaoke track. Uh-huh. And Paul edited the video in iMovie. And
yeah, it was about as just amateur as you could possibly get.
The video's gone now. It's so bad.
Right.
Where you got rid of it?
Shirtless in this video?
It's just hidden.
It's actually available for Matthew's Patreon supporters.
Got it.
And you know a thing or two about that. And what's amazing about that is like, first of all, when Matthew said, let's just do it. Like, I know you're losing your vision, but this was a dream of yours. There's no pressure. I'll be there to help you. Let's just dive in. And that's Matthew's motto in life, is dive in the deep end. And I'm sort of the guy that wants to wait until everything's perfect. And that day never comes, as we realize, you know, there's no such thing. And it was with Matthew's sort of boldness and insistence that we just do something and have a good time. And then I got to sort of address this dream of mine, like in a way, and just as a fun little project, like that's all we thought it was going to be. But then the video was picked up by Priot.com.
And just before we filmed at the very first location, which was Crater Lake.
Oh, you want to tell the shirtless part?
Paul said to me, that's important.
Yeah.
I was going to say, when did it become shirtless, or was it shirtless then?
Well, I had ended up playing shirtless for Paul in our apartment once, just because I was like halfway between changing, getting ready to go to the gym. And he said to me, oh, this is how we got to make this music video. And I laughed because I thought it was a really funny joke, but not serious.
Yeah, he was standing in the living room playing in the heat of the, you know, the summer, and playing Hallelujah in little, like, I don't know, workout shorts and no shirt. And I thought, oh my God, like, that's magical. I mean, who isn't going to love that combination?
Yeah.
So I sort of insisted. I said, we have to do it this way. I mean, how else are we going to stand out? How
I thought different? You were completely joking. Mm-hmm. That's why I just laughed. I was like, yeah. But then when he was holding the little iPhone up at Crater Lake, he's like, so are you going to take the shirt off?
Yeah, I may be blind, but I knew the shirt was still on. So take that off.
Take it off.
So I took it off. I grew up very religious. So taking my shirt off in public was not something I was comfortable. I swam in a t-shirt growing up.
Wow.
So I just didn't do that. But I did, because we were newly dating, and you have to do what your new boyfriend asks you to. Yeah. Kind of have to go along with it.
Yeah. I don't get away with stuff like that.
No, not now. And so we put one video on the YouTube channel. It got, I don't know, like a couple hundred views right away.
We were just like, who's watching this?
We're like, wow, like people are watching the video. And then I think Priot.com wrote about it.
That was a thrilling moment, because we were like, oh, this little fun video we made. And it was this hilarious but supportive article that sort of dissected the entire video. And I think
like really funny way.
It was really cute, and they had GIFs and everything. And we were like, okay. Matthew immediately said, well, we have to do another one. You know, like, somebody's watching this. We have to make a second video. And that was never the plan initially. We just wanted to make one
just gonna be once.
Music video. So,
When that got picked up, you made it. When did you make it this commitment? I'm going to continue to consistently make content. And how do you still manage that? Because I mean, I've made plenty of content. And
I mean, we have a hard enough time scheduling
our Instagram stuff,
or just time to come here at the same
to the podcast.
Yeah, it's just the podcast.
So how do you? I mean, you're lucky. I mean, we do have to freelance outside work for ourselves. Like, I'm in Wicked, and he's doing some ballet gigs, but. You're able to work mostly from home together, but when did you make this commitment, and what is your like goal? Like, how consistently do you want to make videos, and do you release them?
So it was 4 months later where we were like, oh, shoot, we have to get really consistent.
You can cuss.
I can?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, shit. We need to get serious. There's like a growing market for this, and people seem to like it. So that's when we started our Patreon, because we were like, we're spending our own money, and we were spending more and more with they just got exponentially more expensive, because we eventually didn't want it them filmed on iPhones or recorded in a garage band. So we were constantly upping the production value and finding film students who would film and who had actual cameras and going into a studio. So Patreon really crowdfunded all of our videos. And so that's, we just completed 3 years of crowdfunded music videos. They're really hard to put out consistently because everyone is different. Some of them are super expensive. Sometimes we put together a plan and it all falls completely apart and it doesn't come together. So we have like amazing partial footage, or we had this beautiful shoot where we never actually got any footage from it. So we've had everything possibly happen. So my kudos goes out to people who actually put out music videos on like a schedule. I don't know how. I haven't figured that out. There are, people don't realize how complicated and expensive just one music video is, even the simple ones.
And I feel like it's not just that. It's that Matthew and I aren't really content doing the same exact thing over and over again.
Yeah.
We are constantly trying to come up with fresh and sort of original creative ideas because, I mean, that is sort of what we have in common and what started this whole thing is that we are itching that sort of that need for new creative ideas expressed, and we get bored easily once we've sort of created something. We don't want to repeat it precisely. So
well, we have to collaborate. I think we could do an idea where you play violin.
Yes.
We animate something within that. Steven dances and I sing. Yes. And we all do a whole combo together.
Yeah.
Oh, I would love that.
That would be cool.
We love collaborating with dancers and singers.
And I want to come to Seattle. So we'll make that work.
I've never been.
That's perfect. Yeah. Okay. We can show you around.
Figure it out.
Okay. Yeah. We love getting dancers. We've had dancers in a couple.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think it's just the perfect pairing.
Totally.
Is music and dance. Mm-hmm. And I've only been able to collaborate with one singer so far, but I loved it. Tom Goss, who's in LA.
Yeah. Cool. Let's figure that out.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
So you've been together now. So you've been doing the videos for 3 years, but how long have you been together as a couple?
Well, the video started, I would say, 2 months after we started dating.
Okay. Wow.
And we've been doing crowdfunded videos for 3 years, but we actually started the first iPhone video just 2 months into our relationship.
So how long ago was that?
So 3.5 years ago.
3.5 years ago, you've been together.
Yeah.
And something that I know about you, Paul, is that like us, you're sober.
Mm-hmm.
How long have you been sober?
5 years. We just celebrated 5 years. I say we because... because Matthew, for the first time ever on my sober birthday, which was on January 15th, Matthew surprised me with this little piece of carrot cake with 5 candles in it. And it was the sweetest thing because I've always just sort of kind of celebrated that on my own. And I just thought that was really sweet and supportive. Matthew's just super supportive of that part of my life.
Do you guys, when you met, you were already sober?
Yeah, I'd have been sober for about 1.5 years.
And... we're kind of lucky because we both don't drink, so we're just like whatevs. Yeah. Like we get, which LaCroix do you want? There's never like
or if we're at a bar or in a situation where people are drinking, we're like, let's go. Like it's not like, do you want to stay? No, we're like, okay, let's go.
what is it like for you guys? Are there any complications or anything that comes up for you as a couple being one sober, one not?
Well, growing up religious, I didn't drink. In fact, I even waited to drink, and when I started drinking, it was red wine. And so I'm not a big drinker, especially needing to be shirtless. Alcohol just doesn't work. You can't drink a lot of alcohol and try to maintain a shirtless condition. Yeah. So I am usually not drinking. It's only like on a cheat night where I will get a bottle of red wine. And that's all I want. I don't like hard alcohol at all. Sometimes I've had a couple of shots before going on stage to increase vascularity, which is a weird thing that bodybuilders do. I don't do that anymore. I tried it, but I hated that. So it actually works really well. I'm grateful he's sober. I love it. Mm-hmm. I don't have to deal. I've been in relationships where that wasn't the case, and it can be not fun just because I don't drink a lot. I mean, a glass of red wine is really it for me. Mm-hmm. And Paul doesn't mind if I do that. That's been fine.
Yeah. I mean, it's so interesting. I mean, it's been a long journey for me. I started going to AA meetings in my early 20s, trying to quit. And I didn't have a lot of success just because of the place and time, I guess, in my life. I wasn't ready. And I even dated within AA, which I for a while thought this is the only way I can do it. I can only be with somebody who's sober. But by the time I came to that moment of making the decision for myself to stop, which was a real battle for a long time, which I link to just self-worth, not really knowing my own self-worth yet or my value, and getting to a point in my life where it just clicked, like mm-hmm. my life will be wasted if I don't start to value myself. It was more than just putting down the drink. It was about understanding my own worth. Mm. And that was just a real, and that's a journey. That's not an easy place to get, but I got there. And thankfully, as soon as that happened, I mean, I feel super lucky in that it just completely left me. The desire to harm myself, the desire to continue lying to myself, like this was just going to be the last time, the last drink. And those lies I got so tired of telling, it just was a transformative moment for me on January 15th, 2015.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Congrats. And when I met Matthew and I learned that, you know, he drank, honestly, I didn't care anymore. I didn't care. I had no issue about being around somebody who drank. But I had dated a guy who wasn't an alcoholic, but drank probably every night. And I found that was a bit challenging in that a lot of his social activities were sort of surrounding alcohol. And I thought, well, how's this going to work? But with Matthew, like he said, he only drinks red wine and it's quite rare. I mean, usually it's just like once a week or something. It's very, very rare. And I know he's not, I was raised by alcoholics and I know that Matthew's not an alcoholic because he will like, when he's done with his wine, he'll like, you know, dump the glass down the sink. I'm like, are you
who
crazy?
Does
who
yeah.
does that?
Who does that? Yeah.
So that definitely was like not. Confirmation for me that he was definitely not like me and my family.
Yeah.
And he did not have that addictive quality. And I'll be honest, there's a part of me that appreciates that he is the drinker so that when we do go out and we're social, it's, you know, he can sort of relate with the people and kind of imbibe with them over wine and have that aspect of the relationship. Because sometimes I feel like, and I don't know if you experience this, and maybe this is really a personal thing. I mean, as non-drinkers, there's just a lot of things we don't do or have any interest in doing. And I kind of want to leave right now because why do I want to stay here and get drunker with these people?
Mm-hmm.
So Matthew will imbibe. And I find that sort of like, okay, there's a bit of the attention off the fact that I'm not drinking and that you understand that.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
No, completely. I mean, absolutely. We constantly, I mean, I have this like really vivid memory one time of being with a coworker at an event and she was having a drink and I had just as a friend had shared that I was sober. And I remember it was new information to her and we're sitting there having this, she's having a drink and I'm having a seltzer and she's like, is it okay that I'm drinking this?
Right.
And it's like, why is my not drinking an mm-hmm. issue for you?
Yeah.
And I remember saying to her, I don't know. Is it?
Like you tell me.
You tell me
or because you like, open up about
if
it?
Me not drinking is an issue for you, I don't know what to tell you. But yeah. So you always, you know, and that's it. You always do sort of feel in those situations like you stand out. But the truth is, these people don't care. They just want someone to.
They don't care.
They're not going to remember.
Feel not alone.
Not going to remember.
I used to think everybody in the room was noticing,
was talking about it.
Nobody
cares.
Yeah. Nobody cares.
But it's a hard place to get to. Like you just constantly feel like oh.
Yeah. What happens for what we share a lot is about an hour, maybe half an hour into the party, the conversations just get really dull.
Oh, or like a repeat story. So then you're like, themselves. Oh, I think I've heard this twice already. I think it's time to go.
Yep. And this is what I'll tell you something I love about Matthew. I think I've only seen you drunk a couple times, maybe once or twice. Matthew doesn't drink to get drunk. And so as soon as people start getting to that point, we are out of there.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah,
we
yeah,
love yeah, to go to bed early yeah, and get our 8 to 9 hours.
You Why know? Are we so much
ago? Yeah. God, I have a lot
I'm
common.
A two glasses person. Yeah. And if we'll both look at each other and be like,
let's go.
It's time.
We're at
it's,
the point yeah, where no one will remember what they're even talking about. We're mm-hmm, having conversations, and tomorrow this person won't know that they had this conversation.
Yeah.
So we always leave early.
Yeah. Have you ever been to a party where you're like, you know you're going to leave early, so get into a couple photos, group photos, yep, real quick,
so
make a
know,
couple of impressions in tell conversations,
a
tell yeah, a joke, get a good laugh.
So they remember that
the
you
back,
were there.
Yeah. Yeah. My
so you were there.
And we're in bed by 10 p.m.
Yeah. Yeah, my sponsor said to me early on when I got sober, he's like, show up late and leave early.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I still follow that rule. It's like,
oh, that's good.
Show up late, get your photos in, selfies, mm-hmm, and be like, I gotta go, mm-hmm, and peace out. And it's always just enough time. Mm-hmm. It's enough of an appearance. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's my.
Yeah, I hate bars and clubs. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of perfect because Paul doesn't enjoy right, them, and you don't see mm-hmm, in any bar club.
That's
so
true.
We just don't go. Yeah, yeah. People be like, what's the best club to go to in Seattle? I'm like, I don't know.
We don't know.
Yeah, no clue.
We don't do it. We yeah, can tell you go, every coffee shop.
Yeah.
Maybe, like,
yeah,
with great
and
lighting.
Yeah. And I will say, like, so that now, you know, you guys have been kind of in this social media influencer space in the gay community longer than us. But what's interesting is we do get a lot of people, and this we'll dive this into gonna, a little bit more, but we get people who do that. They're like, hey, what's a good bar to go to? What's a good place to go to? And we're like, I seriously, no clue. Like, I could not, like, oh, somebody said that mentioned a gay bar in New York the other day in the dressing room, and I was like, that's still there, you know? I had
in
no
the
idea
early
that
2000s
I used
to
go there,
there
in like 2002. So fascinating.
I've been to Blazing Saddles.
Yes,
that was
that's fun.
Wonderful.
I've never
that's
been
a fun
there,
place.
You've been there?
I've just been to the one
see
in
them
LA
dance
oh, okay,
on the countertop.
Yeah, yeah, I've never incredible, been there
because Tyrone remember,
oh,
was dancing
right, oh right, oh right,
so I went with a bunch of classical musicians. So we all had a glass of wine, we watched them dance, and we all left really early. So it's very tame.
Okay, so there was, so we always do this segment on our podcast that we call
Spotlight on Love.
And usually what we do is somebody will write in to us and want relationship advice. And when I put the question out yesterday, which you probably saw on our Instagram stories, I didn't get really good situations. Just sometimes people are like, I'm having a tough time with this or whatever. All I got was this one question, and I thought actually it would just be a really good topic of conversation. And the question was, I think they didn't speak English first, how to handle when get jealous, which okay, to me is like, you know,
yeah,
there's no specific situation here, but when we all of us work in sort of this public arena now, especially people see your body all the time on videos. Steven gets the same thing as a ballet dancer. They're constantly seeing him in tights, and you know, we get strange DMs from people and interesting invitations and things like right, that. And as a couple, you know, how do you guys handle jealousy when it comes up, and what triggers that for you guys, if anything?
It's such a great question for people in the business that we're in and with social media such as it is. We have been asked, because Matthew being, you know, this sort of, I mean, sex being a big part of what he is his business and his brand. Mm-hmm. It's about sexuality and it's about being sexy. It invites a lot of those strange DMs.
I'm sure.
You know, we've had some interesting requests and things and sort of forward messages and requests. But I'm not a jealous person. And I think it's sort of linked to what I was saying earlier about that sense of worth and value that I have in myself. And I really think it has to come down to that. But of course, the foundation of our relationship is so strong, in my opinion, and I know Matthew shares that opinion. And for me, and maybe you can relate to this, because we all do things that are sort of stage-related. You have a stage persona, and you have the real you behind the scenes, who I go home with every night and go to bed with every night. And I know that when people are sending messages, they're sending messages to the curated character that Matthew and I created, named mm-hmm. the Shirtless Violinist. They're not sending them to Matthew Olszewski, the man I married. They're sending them to this sort of carefully created And not that Matthew isn't extremely genuine, but it is, there's a separation there. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's separated in my mind. I find it endlessly amusing. And quite frankly, I would be worried if these messages weren't happening all the time. I think that's we're doing something wrong, Matthew. Yeah, yeah. I think it's going to have to be sexier tomorrow.
Yeah, you know, I've been in several relationships. That's a great question. But for some reason, this one just had a level of trust. Mm. It's just there. And I don't know why. I mean, I could say, well, this one didn't, this one did, this was why there wasn't. But for some reason, we just kind of started off with it. Mm-hmm. And it's been there, and there hasn't been anything to break that trust, which is really wonderful. And I think because we both have a really good sense of humor, we just see everything that comes in as just like really funny and really fun or enjoyable. I mean, sometimes I'm like, wow, Paul, look at this. This is nice. I'm like, this is a little perk.
Yeah.
A little perk.
Yeah.
We share all that with each other. Yeah. You know, and we're often, right. If we're fielding messages and people think that they're only talking to Matthew, I'm right next to him.
Right.
He's reading things aloud to me. I mean, there's just that open, that openness. So
I love that.
What about you guys? How do you deal with that sort of thing?
It's interesting. I could also, because we didn't really touch on this, but with your religious background, I wonder if there's, but we'll talk about that in a minute. But I know for me, Stephen's pretty bashful and he's always been that way. And it's one of the things I love about him. But he, you know, getting him to, because he's got the body, I don't. And
sometimes I have the body.
But getting him to feel like, we need to take a shirtless photo. No, I don't want to do it. I'm like, well, do you want 1,000 likes or not? You know?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, just, and it's interesting actually just hearing you say like this idea of a persona and like what that is, and Broadway Husbands as a persona or whatever. But it's just interesting. It's good information to like to kind of take in. Mm. But we have definitely, I think our fields of, we're both performers, so our field is, our creative field is so similar. Mm-hmm. And there are definitely moments where Stephen's getting more success, or he's making more money, or he's booked a higher profile gig, where it's hard not to, it's not jealousy, it's hard not to feel like I'm not doing enough or I'm not stepping up enough.
I feel like this is kind of like the conversation that we had recently, because I feel like I'm kind of in that position right now. Like you said something to me like 2 days ago and I was like, it's just, so what you're telling me is that I'm not doing enough. And I was like, and he was like, that's not what I said at all.
No.
And I was like, but I kind of, you know, at this point in time, I feel like I'm doing like 5 different jobs just to make my, you know, ends meet. And so,
I mean, we're constantly navigating that. And so how do we, cause Stephen honestly has been mostly the breadwinner for most of our marriage. He's always made the most money, even when he was dancing New York City Ballet and, you know, in between gigs for me, like if I worked at a regional theater, you don't make that much money. And he'll do a Nutcracker, as you know, the Nutcracker ballet world, he can make in one weekend more than I make in 3 months. So, you know, there, it's hard not to start to feel like I'm not holding up my end of the bargain. And I don't know if that really is jealousy as much as it's.
Yeah.
That is
just like being clear as to like what our role is in the relationship, right, at what point, and
allowing room to like, you know, like I literally have to say to him, allow me to actually take care of you in this moment because it's just a season and it could be over tomorrow. And in this season,
and
let me do this.
If we're telling the truth, I mean, I cooked breakfast, I made dinner, I do all the laundry. I mean, so
it's very nice.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I can attest to that.
Yeah. I'm just, it's so incredible to listen to you guys talk about that. And this is sort of like taking the conversation in a different direction. It's not jealousy, but it's about that feeling like you're holding up your end of the bargain, so to speak. And that there's that almost, you described that bit of that competitive side of like, who is getting more work, who's doing more work, who's putting more out there. And I think it's something that we can relate to because we're independent artists. Mm-hmm. We are funneling our own careers. We are. Matthew and I have recently said that like we are, every day is about hustling. It's hustle, hustle, hustle. How can we hustle what we're doing to make money? And if we stop, the whole thing halts. Mm-hmm. It's over, right? There's nothing that else holding it up. It's the energy we put into it every day. And so, you know, just as well as we do, that
I mean, 1 month I'm up and 1 month he's up and I'm down, and it's just kind of all over the place. But when you get this sort of bigger picture, I'm like, oh, you know, it's kind of a little more even. And even if it's not about who's providing the most money, but what are you doing? As you just said, the laundry, the cooking. I mean, the relationship is built of all of those components. And so thankfully, we've never had any issue over money. And that's so much to Matthew's credit, because when he met me, I mean, I definitely wasn't in a great financial situation, and it's improved just through, I think, the love and support of Matthew and his support of my creativity.
I love that. That's team.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're a team.
Do you want to say anything else about jealousy?
Why me?
I don't know. He tends to be the jealous one.
Oh, okay. I do. I don't know. I think it comes from, like, you know, being such a busy, he's busy. So when I feel like we're not connecting much as I would like day to day, like, for instance, one of our conversations last night was like, can you just look me in the eyes for like 2 minutes?
Oh, God.
Can
yes.
we just like stare at each other just for 2 minutes? Because I feel like there's so much there's so many things happening that... Yeah, I'm like, can I just get like a moment? Mm-hmm. That's all I need. Okay, thank you.
We can we work in right the here, same right. apartment, but sometimes at the end of the day I'll say, "Paul,
please.
I didn't get to connect with you for 1 minute." He's like, "What? We did this together and this we worked the entire day." I'm like, "No,
of course I hear that as a criticism." I hear that as a criticism, and I'm very sensitive. I will admit, I'm like the super sensitive one. It doesn't take much to upset me. I'm like, cuz I don't take criticism very well. I think I'm getting better at it, but I try, and I'll be really open and honest about it. So
I'm the same.
Okay.
That's why I'm laughing.
I'm feeling a little better about that. Yeah. And Matthew is very good at it. He can take it. I mean, he's as growing up as a classical musician, he knows how to take criticism. So we will always encounter that. Like, how do you really connect? I mean, I feel like sometimes we're desperate for real connection, and we live in this busy, busy world where we can work till day to night. And we're sort of like, I can get obsessive about work and really work mode, and like really, it's hard to pull me away from projects and like,
I'll
really
get mad. I'll be
time.
Like, I am not going to sit in front of the screen with you and watch a show tonight.
Because I'll say, we can connect. We can watch Portlandia on Netflix together. And he's thinking, well, that's not connecting. We're staring at the screen. And I said, well, we're cuddling.
Usually staring at a screen is not connecting.
Well, so quickly, what's next for you guys? Like, what do you see happening?
I just want to do more of what I'm doing. I love performing live. As the shirtless violinist that took me out of live performances, which you guys are doing, which I love. There's energy, it's excitement, and recording in a studio and filming in front of a camera crew is just boring. They get so tired of you so quickly, and they just, you know, they're long days. So I've been doing more live performing. I love that. It's so exciting, and there's the, you know, the spontaneity of what's going to happen and what's going to go wrong, and that's fun.
I'm a straight up stage mom when he's on stage.
Oh, are you?
I'm like so nervous. I'm like mouthing his lines because I script some of the stuff that he says between sets, and it's just, but it is so fun to watch him come alive on stage. Oh. It's a totally different experience because he spends a lot of time in the recording studio, and I sit in on every session in the recording studio with him. But to see him on stage is super special. So,
A new album this year. Oh, so I want to do my second full studio album. I did Disney Strings this last year, and this year I'm hoping to do a full album with a symphony orchestra. So.
Whoa, yeah, cool. So
working with an arranger in LA to hopefully pick out some songs and get it arranged. So
cool. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Well, both of your work is just beautifully creative. And you can check all their stuff out on social media, but you can check out Paul's stuff on Etsy too.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. And shirtlessviolinist.com.
Yes.
And make sure you check our show notes. You can follow them on Instagram. And we want to thank you guys for being on
the podcast. Thank you so much.
This was so much fun.
It was really fun to meet.
Oh my God. I made new friends.
Yes.
I can't wait for you guys to come out to Seattle.
Yes, please. And on this podcast, we encourage you to
love who you love
and love what you do. Yay.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.